on days where Arthur decides to visit family and maybe not show up on the radio every once in a while, the letters and the emails and the telephone calls I get are amazing. So, Arthur, it's doubly good to have you back today.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, as I said, maybe twice in 15 years.
You know, it's funny. Whenever it happens, people, I get emails, what happened to Arthur? Where's Arthur?
Well, that's very gratifying, I have to say. But I'm fine. It was, you know, the thing is, I wasn't expecting to stay until Monday morning. I was expecting to come home on Sunday, but plans changed. Anyway, moving on. The weather has changed, too.
Yes, it has.
Yes, and this is encouraging me to make things that require long cooking. Many things. You know, by the way, let me just say, because I have been reporting on my diet progress over the last year, that I just had a new checkup, and my numbers are, as a former doctor once said, brilliant. So I'm fine. Don't worry. In any case, I attribute a lot of my, for instance, lessening arthritic pain to this diet. But it does allow me to eat a lot of meat. On the other hand, it's really hard to get good beef these days, I find. And when you find it, it's hugely expensive. So in that case, I'd just as soon have a steak, which sometimes satisfies my beef cravings, because even steaks, you know, even the best steak can be disappointing, I find. There's certain restaurants that get by the way, I can buy the same beef that I can get in a restaurant, but I can't cook it even as well as I do cook it. I have to say, on my black iron skillet, it's not the same as a 800-degree broiler. I'm playing with my broiler for weeks now. It's not going to do the job. Moving on, one of the things I have been craving, and I figure, well, you know, even okay beef is good enough for this dish. It's something in Italian you call stracchetti. Now, that means rags. And the reason is, it's very, very, very thinly as you can get it, sliced beef, hopefully tender beef. I used to find top round was good for this, but the big but is you have to have somebody who will slice it for you, because you can never slice it yourself that thin. So my butcher will put it on the machine, and if it gets really raggy, that's good, because it's stracchetti. It's supposed to be beef rags. And this is something I don't need to have cool weather for, because it only takes a few minutes with the high heat. But what you do is you infuse some olive oil, your best olive oil. You're not going to really, it's not going to really be exposed to high heat. And I don't know, for a third of a cup of oil in a large skillet, I would use 3 large cloves of garlic, and then I smash them with the heel of my hand and peel off the paper and put those in the pan with the oil, still over no heat. And 2 large sprigs of rosemary. If you don't have fresh rosemary, I would use a fresh herb in this case, not a dried herb. So sage is wonderful here. Thyme is terrific. The two more ideas. And then you put this over low heat, lowest possible heat, and let it sit there and infuse for at least 20 minutes. That's it. That's your whole preparation. When you're ready to eat, turn the heat up to high underneath it, and as soon as it starts to sizzle slightly, put in your rags of beef, salt, pepper, turn them around, literally turn them, and then it's done. You don't want to cook this well. You want to basically have raw-ish meat covered with delicious, delicious oil, and you can put this on a salad. An arugula salad. I would dress the salad first with oil and vinegar, salt and pepper. But watercress is great here. I'm into watercress. I don't know if you're aware of this, but it's the next super vegetable. Kale is out. Watercress is in.
Good.
So, don't do this with kale. It's too tough. But other salads are nice, and it's not bad to have one that has a little peppery bite, like watercress or arugula. And the little, what we used to call baby arugula, rucchetta, that you can buy it cleansed in a box, is perfect for this. Oh, spinach, a baby spinach, I don't know what they call it, the little heart-shaped spinach leaves, that's good for this too, actually. So that's my stracchetti. But I'm thinking, I really want to make something long-cooked. Do I want to make a pot roast? Not really. And then I had this idea. I couldn't resist, Marshall. We talked about this a few weeks ago. I went and bought a can of corned beef hash.
No, which type?
Well, I could not find broadcast. The only one that I could find is Libby's.
Yep.
And I really had to hunt for it. It was rightfully, if they're going to block some shelves of food, it should be the canned meat section. So both times I've been to this local supermarket where I spotted it behind, but I couldn't move that truck of whatever was there. Anyway, I bought it. If you cook it long enough and it gets crispy, it's okay. But you got to get through, and I'm going to say it, you got to get through this, the opening the can and it looking like dog food. If you can get beyond that, squish it into a small skillet and let it cook over medium heat until it starts sizzling. And I found there must be some good moisture in this because it popped. Be careful. It almost popped into my eye in the pan. I wasn't doing anything. And then flip it over. You can't flip it as a pancake yet. So you just keep on sort of mushing it and blah. Anyway, the whole thing, we ate it. But the whole thing encouraged me to make my own corned beef hash, which I have done many a time. But that requires you to make a corned beef first. So it's a two-meal dish. You make corned beef and cabbage, and then you have the leftover corned beef to make corned beef hash, and that's the way life should be. So for, I don't know how big I want to have a whole brisket, meaning what they call the flat or the first cut,
yep,
and the triangular piece on top, which I, as a Jewish boy, call dekel, but it's called, I don't know what else it's called. It's a cap of meat, very different muscle altogether, very well marbled, absolutely delicious. Connecting the flat piece and this is a layer of fat. You want all of that. You're going to trim it off in the end. I know somebody who's in her 90s now who used to tell me that her Austrian father loved to shave the fat off of the boiled corned beef, and or even a brisket, a fresh brisket, and put that softened fat on a piece of bread and sprinkle it with salt, and that was his treat and a half. I fully understand this, but I'm not doing it. So 4 to 5 pound brisket, 7 pound brisket, whatever the pound of brisket is, put it into a big pot. I mean a brisket. It's a corned beef brisket. When I say brisket, it's the same cut of meat,
yeah,
as a fresh brisket. It's just that it's pickled by somebody who knows what they're doing, not you. You have to now cook it. And usually takes 2 or 3 hours. Could even be 4 hours. Don't be impatient. Most people are impatient with their corned beef, and they end up with really tough meat, or they cook it way too long, and they end up with rope. So it's not as foolproof as one would think. So you place this big piece of meat in a big pot and cover it with cold water, place it over high heat, and as soon as it bubbles, the bubbles will break the surface of the water. You don't want it boiling. adjust the heat so the pot simmers very, very gently. And you can skim off the scum as it accumulates on the surface. I have a special strainer / skimmer that I use for this, and it really makes the job easy. A slotted spoon will do the job, sort of, if it's got small holes. Anyway, when the foam, we'll call it, stops coming to the surface, add some pickling spices. This is a corned beef, yes, but you can add flavor by throwing in at least a teaspoon of pickling spices. You know, those are the ones you buy in the supermarket labeled pickling spices. It's mustard seed, usually broken up bay leaf, allspice, sometimes a hot pepper, but a good heaping teaspoon of this into 5 quarts of water. If you're using more than 5 quarts of water, use more pickling spices accordingly. And let this thing just cook with bubbles just breaking on the surface for at least 3 hours, I would say. And when you take your two-pronged fork and it goes in easily, then it's done. Now, if you have to do this ahead, and most of us do need to do it ahead, I would say sort of time it so that it doesn't stay in the water. Turn off the heat and let it sit there for, you can, 2 or 3 hours. By that time, it will be cooling down. It won't even get cool until 2 or 3 hours in this big pot of meat. So I like to cook for corned beef and cabbage, I like to cook my vegetables separately. Now, you can use fresh water, but you could also use the water you just cooked the corned beef in. So the vegetables, to me, would be wedges of cabbage, a must. It's corned beef and cabbage, after all. But if you want to add some carrots or turnips or potatoes, of course, you can cook all those, too. And I serve this. I like it with horseradish. Some people like it with mustard. You know, mustard and horseradish are related. In fact, what was it the other day? We were eating a commercial coleslaw that we'd never had before. And Bob said, I don't like this coleslaw. It has too much horseradish in it. Well, there was no horseradish in it at all, but there was powdered mustard in it. You can read the label and see. So they are very closely related. So whether you like mustard or horseradish or a horseradish sauce, I mean, but I like just plain old horseradish. Now, the beauty of this is, of course, that you get to make hash the next day. And for a hash, I would use, let's say you have a pound of cooked corned beef. That's going to be about 4 cups cut into diced. You want to take your, and if you just made a 5-pound brisket, it's going to shrink down a lot. I would say this is about a quarter of whatever you made of the whole brisket. In fact, if you want, how about saving the deckle part just for the hash, because it's nice and fatty and so juicy and delicious. So I cut that into dice. You should have 3.5-4 cups of diced beef. To that, you're going to need a medium to medium-large onion. I'm into more onion than less these days. So it could even be a large onion, diced. Sauté it in vegetable oil, not olive oil, not butter, in good vegetable oil, until it gets nice and tender. Takes 5, 6 minutes, 7 minutes, not brown. And then add 2 pounds of potatoes that you boiled and until they were more or less tender, and cut also into dice. So you have a medium onion sauteed, couple tablespoons of oil. Throw in the potatoes. Let them cook with the onions for a short time, until they start to get maybe a little crusty here, and let them sit, you know. Don't turn them around and mix them with the onion, but then let them sit so they get a little bit browned, and then flip them over and get them a little bit more brown. At the end, you're going to add in your diced corned beef and let the three items, onion, potato, corned beef, cook together until the corned beef really is falling apart. So it's a real old-fashioned hash. Now, you don't need to put a fried egg on this, but some people would. It's, I think, overkill. As with a homemade hash, I can understand the canned hash. That the egg is improves it. I won't make that again, but I am going to buy a whole corned beef if I can find one that still has deckle. Not easy. But meantime,
just ask
I'm looking through my files this morning to see what else I should be cooking. Now that I can, really make a long cooked dish, and I came across a really interesting recipe that I have not made since I wrote New York City Food, which is a history of New York City told through food. It's called Arthur Schwartz's New York City Food. It has my picture on the cover even. Oh, I didn't mention at the top of this segment that I'm going to be appearing at the Sheffield Library,
all
Sheffield,
right,
Massachusetts Library, on November 6th.
November the 6th.
November 6th. It's Saturday afternoon at 2 p.m. The room, I'm assured, is all COVID secure, and it's limited to only 30 people. I'll be there answering questions, because there's something I don't get to do on the radio is what I used to do on the radio, which is Q&A. So come prepared with lots of questions. Do not ask me about restaurants. I know nothing. Anyway, I ran across this, speaking of history, I ran across this recipe I haven't made since I was testing recipes for the book. And this is literally a recipe from old New Amsterdam, meaning New York City before it became New York, who is Dutch. And this was a sort of a daily Dutch dish. Later, it's called a hotspot. You know, a lot of our words are, in fact, from Dutch. Here in New York, anyway. New York food terms, because we were Dutch. And, in fact, Brooklyn, which is a Dutch name of a town in the Netherlands, then Holland, Brooklyn is a Dutch name, and many, many of our streets in Brooklyn are Dutch names. Anyway, this is a Dutch recipe that years later they would add cornmeal to and make sort of a stiff polenta kind of thing and slice and grill. But this is the basic stew. Now, what's interesting about this is it's a sort of a basic beef soup / stew. The seasoning is fresh ginger and grated ground mace or nutmeg. And you ask, how did the Dutch come to ginger and nutmeg? Well, of course, in the days of the of New Amsterdam, we were trading. The Dutch were trading with the tropical islands of the West Indies. By the way, the company that New York did not start as a colony; it started as a trading post of the Dutch West India Company, and that's because they were trading the Dutch in the West Indies, what we can call the West Indies, they called the West Indies. Anyway, so trading, of course they had ginger and they had nutmeg. So this is very interesting. You just melt some butter in a saucepan. I haven't done this in a while. But I would use either a deep skillet or a saucepan, a wide saucepan for this. Because you have 2 pounds of, let's say, chuck stew meat cut into 1-inch cubes, and you're going to brown the meat cubes in butter, a few at a time, because you really do want to get them brown. And as you get them brown, put them aside, take a slotted spoon and put them aside, and when they're all done, add 2 tablespoons. It's a lot of finely chopped fresh ginger root. two tablespoons, could even be two rounded tablespoons, not even tablespoons, and a quarter of a teaspoon of ground mace or nutmeg. Now, if you're not a baker, you probably don't have mace, but you might have nutmeg. And I always have freshly grated nutmeg. In fact, may I say, I collect nutmeg graters of all kinds. And a lot of them are packed away in a box, but there are two that I use every day. So a quarter of a teaspoon is a lot of nutmeg. And then add the meat back. And just enough water to cover the meat. Bring it to a simmer and simmer it gently for at least an hour. I find it takes really more than an hour. And if you need to add a little bit more water to keep the level straight, then do that. At the very end, let's remember, the Netherlands, Holland, is known for dairy products. Butter in particular. So this dish, just before serving it, you stir in butter. This is 2 pounds of meat. You're going to stir in 3 tablespoons of butter and at least a rounded half cup of chopped parsley. Ends up looking pretty good. You need to have a lot of bread with this so you can dunk into the juices. It's really more of a soup than a stew. It's like halfway between. It's got a lot of broth, though. Delicious, gingery, peppery broth. Did I say salt and pepper?
Yes.
You need salt and pepper here. And that's it. Great beef dish, and you don't need a broiler. And then I found, this is interesting, this is a dish, a recipe, I should say, that I put into my newsletter of 1978. No, it can't be newsletter because I wasn't writing one in 1978. But this recipe has a 1978 date on it. I remember it, and I remember loving it, but I don't remember where I got it from. And it's another one of those soupy stew things, again with 2 pounds of beef, and again browning the meat in some, in this case I'm using olive oil. And so brown the meat in olive oil, put it back in the pot, sprinkle it with 3 tablespoons of flour, so it's got a thickened gravy at the end, and continue to cook that for a few minutes until, you know, you sort of have a roux. The flour should get a little bit cooked. It shouldn't be get brown, but it definitely can color. And then add water. You don't even need broth. Oh, by the way, this is a beef and lentil. So this goes a long way. I would say this could feed 8 people easily. I would say 8. In my recipe says 6, but I don't know who could eat all this soup and meat. So add enough water, really quite a lot, 5 cups of water, and cover the pot and simmer gently until the meat is tender. And then add your vegetables and lentils. The vegetables being 2 large ribs of celery, 4 or 5 carrots, depending on the size, sliced, and also the ribs of celery sliced. I would say 3 medium onions, a lot of onions, chopped coarsely, and add that and a whole cup of lentils. And for this, use your good old American brown lentils that will eventually sort of fall apart. And you cook that, and stirring it well, of course, and add water, if you need to cover everything, and let it simmer for another hour, covered. And at the very end, this is very with it at the moment, but looks like I was doing it in 78, add the juice of a half a lemon and correct the salt and pepper. It is a thick, dense lentil and beef stew, soup, but more stew. And on a hearty day in the winter, you'll be happy I told you this recipe.
I was, before you got to that recipe and you mentioned it, my grandmother used to make that. And today, when you have lentil stews or soups for people, they're too watery.
Yeah.
They're too watery.
Well, this is really thick. If you asked my father, what's your favorite food, he would say thick soup. Literally, he did answer that. thick soup. We grew up eating a lot of thick soup.
My grandmother...
Mushroom barley soup, lentil soup, potato soup. One I didn't like as a child, but now I love lima bean soup.
My grandmother used to make a great soup with lentils and frankfurters.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Oh.
Well, you know, I mean, that's standard, Marshall.
I know.
That's as much as Hungarian as your grandmother was, and American, too. Because, well, they had hot dogs in Hungary, of course. What am I talking about? They weren't hot dogs, though. They were other kinds of sausage. I don't know if I mentioned this on the air, but I just bought them again. There are these sausage that I'm finding in the supermarket and two different supermarkets that I shop in. And they're called calabrese, but they're not Italian. They're Brazilian. They're Luganisa calabrese. So they're supposedly, I looked this up, they're supposedly, you know, from the Calabrian influence in Brazil, and I don't doubt that there is. In fact, one of New York's, I don't even know if he's still open, but there is a chef in New York who grew up in Brazil with Sicilian grandmothers, so why couldn't you have Calabrese grandmothers, you know? Anyway, those sausage would be very good with lentils.
All right.
In a lentil soup.
So
when I graduate to that high carb degree that I will eat a full lentil soup, which I haven't yet, I'll get there. But I think I'm going to do mashed potatoes before I do lentils. Lentils are actually, you know, great food, and if I wasn't on a stupid diet, I would eat them happily. I might make boiled beef, though. That takes hours on top of the stove.
Yeah.
Except that I make it Neapolitan style these days, which is, you know, they're always in a hurry. So they cut the meat into, like, thick slices as opposed to a whole roast. Like, 2-inch thick slice of chuck is a good thing. And just simmer it with diced onion, carrot, celery, the usual. Of course, if you're Neapolitan, you might add some hot pepper flakes to the water and some cherry tomatoes to the water. You know, cut in half. It gives that a little color and a little umami, as we now know to call it.
All right.
But anyway, Neapolitans knew about umami long before we knew about umami. Of course, the Japanese invented umami, so they knew about it.
All right.
You know what umami is, right?
I watch every chef now on a cooking show mentions umami. Every chef.
If you don't know what it is, folks, look it up.
It's a
necessary vocabulary word.
Okay.
Food vocabulary.
Yes. All right.
All right. All right. Well, so, just as an aside, Neapolitans instinctively knew that tomato products are a natural source of MSG. MSG. Let's talk about that another day.
All right. All right, Arthur.
All right, now I get to have my third cup of coffee.
And you've inspired me. I think it's lentils for me tonight.
Oh, really? And me, it's stracchetti, for sure. I went into the butcher last week to buy the meat, but there was such a long wait and this is a very time-consuming job I'm asking him to do, paper-thin slice some meat on the slicer. So I said I'll do this next week. So here we are, next week.
All right.
Have a great week, everyone.
You too, Arthur. Take care. Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, here on Robin Hood Radio and robinhoodradio.com. For Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, John Andrews Restaurant on the Hillsdale Road in South Egremont, 413-528-3467, on the web, jarestaurant.com. Rubiner's Cheesemongers and Grocers on Main Street in Great Barrington, 413-528-0488, rubiners.com. Hillsdale Home Chef, more information, 518-325-7000, hgshomechef.com.